Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. Arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we have music from and conversation with Chris Sutherland, a.k.a. Shabastic, a painter and hip-hop producer with music in rotation on the Hawks, the music video service of First Nations Experience. First, though, the summer concert series is in full swing at Lake Arrowhead Village, with a few changes this year. I spoke with marketing and events manager Vicki Goodlick.
Go through September 8th this year, so there's about 40 concerts all summer long, Fridays and Saturday nights, and on holiday weekends. So if Monday's a holiday, we'll have a Sunday night concert, and then on Monday, if that's a holiday, we might have an afternoon concert. It's a free concert series. You can come watch it. There's standing room and a dance floor, and there's a lawn where you can bring a chair or a blanket and watch the concert for free. Or we do have some tables, and you can reserve seating and purchase a reserved table at the concert series, and we have a beer garden where the beer garden opens an hour before the concerts, and you can buy beer and wine and sodas and whatnot. Yeah, it's quite enjoyable. It's mostly tribute bands, and that seems to work well up here. Everybody likes to see music they know and love. Every once in a while, we'll have something a little different, but for the most part, it's a lot of really, really great tribute bands, the best in SoCal.
Absolutely,
so yeah. We're lucky to get a lot of the good ones.
Well, let's go through the concert notes. This is going to be much like Syllabus Day in that folks can go to thelakearrowheadvillage.com to read more details, but we're going to talk about it anyway. Let's start by talking about seating and what people can expect, like No Shade, for example, some of the concert notes.
Yeah, we used to have a big tent over the table area where people would sit, and so last year we decided to get rid of the tent. Most of our concerts are in the evening anyway. The sun is basically going down about the time this concert starts, and without the tent, you can actually watch the sky change colors. And
it's
much more open, and, you know, when there's a tent, you have the poles on the sides, and they kind of limit visibility for some people sitting in some areas. So it just opened it wide up. We hung these beautiful little market lights, you know, above to kind of light it up a little bit, and it's just prettier and more open and free, and there's not any trip hazards from tripping on the wires for the tent or anything like that, and it's not a sight obstruction and things like that. So it's really worked out well. A lot of people doubted my decision to get rid of the tent last year, and some people called to complain, but once they came to the concert, I had people coming up to me going, you know, I doubted you at first, but I'm really happy you did this. It's so great. And so I just got nothing but positive feedback about that. But that does mean that if you do come to an afternoon concert or come to have a picnic at the picnic tables in the daytime, you should probably wear a hat or bring a parasol or something because it can be sunny and warm and we don't have the shade there anymore.
Which way is the sun, by the way, as you're getting ready for the evening? Is the sun setting behind you? Is it in front? What direction?
If you're facing center stage, watching the concert, the sun is going from your left to your right. So it's going sideways across you. So it's not in your eyes and it's not at your back. It's just going right over you.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, I read that the footprint for the concert area, this is larger. Is this basically because of the tent being gone or is it truly a larger area?
Well, we used to kind of confine, because you have to confine the alcohol consumption to a specific area.
Yes.
So we used to confine it just to around the tables and the grass area. You know, we left the walkways to the sides open for people to walk back and forth along the shops because the shops line both sides of the peninsula and people would be walking by. And so we tried to confine the alcohol to just kind of right in front of the stage area. But we have opened it up a little wider and we have our barricades at the beginning of the peninsula and then a little further back halfway down the peninsula. So those walkways are sort of included in that area at the moment. You do get your bag checked by security when you come in because you can't bring in outside alcohol and things like that, but you don't have to pay to get in the gate or anything like that. You could just walk through, but it does allow for just what feels like a little more elbow room, what feels like just a little more space for people to stand around or sit and watch the concert. So it feels more spacious, and there definitely is more square footage to the area where the alcohol is limited to.
I also read that you can also have table beer and wine service. That is, they'll bring it to you.
Yeah, it used to be where you had to come to the line and wait in line to get your beers and stuff. And we thought, well, you know, maybe we should try going out to you guys and bringing you your beers if you'd like. So we've added that service. We can't always accommodate it just because our staff is limited. But if we can, we try to get a couple of the beer garden staff people to go out and ask the tables if they need anything. And so, yeah, we do have some table service. If it's super, super crowded and they can't make their way through the crowd very easily, sometimes that makes it a little more difficult. It might take a couple more minutes, but at least you wouldn't have to go stand in line and miss a song, you know?
Right. Yeah. And again, so again, the beer garden opens at 5:30. The concerts start at 6:30. Unless otherwise noted, there are some afternoon concerts going through here. With the bands, again, several returning, what are the ones you see people so excited about? And not to plug any more than others, because they are all really wonderful, but is there more of a buzz with some of them than the others beyond Vicky G and the Dudes?
Yeah, there are. Everybody loves all of them, but I can tell you the ones that sell out the tables fastest are Venice, which is not a tribute band. They're an original band, actually, a local SoCal band, which is awesome. And The Answer, Desperado, an Eagles tribute band, Queen Nation, Led Zeppelin, Which One's Pink, Van Halen, The Spasmatics, Dead Man's Party. All of those are automatic, full house.
Nice.
The Ultimate Stones, Lights, Tribute to Journey. All of those are ones that we really like to get back every year that everybody loves and loves seeing over and over again.
Well, and they are all back this year. You just mentioned. Yeah, so thelakearrowheadvillage.com. It's just easy to go from there. You can go over to the events tab and go down its calendar and then the summer concert series. Your band is playing. That's part of the series as well. That's going to be around Memorial Day?
Yeah, on Memorial Day in the afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. Yeah, we'll play in the afternoon for anybody who wants to come out and hang out and do a little Memorial Day remembrance with us.
You're one of the otherwise noted. You are 2 to 4 p.m. on that day.
Right.
But again, people can see the complete lineup at thelakearrowheadvillage.com and then just a couple more clicks away. So I don't know if this is really a safe question to ask. So here goes. What's your favorite? Couples.
Oh, my goodness. My personal favorite?
Yeah, your personal. And again, they're all great. Let's just get that out of the way. But I want to get people thinking in this direction. You know, why they like one? Is it because of the costumes? Is it because of the great songs? Or just you lean toward Oingo Boingo? You're that kind of gal.
Well, for me personally, I've always been a big Elton John and Beatles fan. So for me, I love Paperback Writer and I love Kenny Metcalf as Elton John. I would say, as far as my type of music and what I like, next would probably be the Eagles tribute, Desperado, Petty and the Heartshakers, you know, Tom Petty. I just love that kind of music, so I'm kind of a 70s girl.
Yeah. Some of the titles, too, I hope people have really been paying attention and maybe getting the connection to what group it was, but I love just the thinking behind a lot of these titles. Just Joshua Tree, that's for you, too. Led Zeppelin again, that's just funny. You know, it just goes from there. It's just fun stuff with that.
Yeah.
Again, the ending date of the summer concert series?
It's September 8th this year.
Okay.
So we usually were stopping the concert series on the Labor Day weekend, which would be like the first, second, third or so of September. But we have one more weekend before Oktoberfest starts. So I thought, well, let's just have another weekend of concerts. So we're going to go through September 8th this year. And that last weekend is a great weekend. We've got the Neil Deal, which is a tribute to Neil Young and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young on that Friday night, the 7th. And then Uptown Funk, which is awesome.
Nice.
It's so dance music. Last year, we had them for the first time, Uptown Funk. It's a Bruno Mars tribute.
Yeah.
One of the newer ones. And last year, everybody in the whole place was up and dancing. It was fantastic.
Fantastic.
So that's going to be fun.
That was Lake Arrowhead Village Marketing and Events Manager Vicky Goodglick. A full lineup for the summer concert series and much more at thelakearrowheadvillage.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Up next, Shebastic, a.k.a. Chris Sutherland, an accomplished painter, lyricist, and hip-hop producer, with music in rotation on the Aux, the music video service of First Nations Experience. The first one to land on the Aux was Skins, behind us now.
Way up the G-Batch, find a Sutherland Creek. Right before the S-Band, where the Sutherland sleep. From the swamp where the Crees still go hunting for me. Never thought I'd be up in the streets hunting a beast. Never thought I'd be an MC living on the road. Living off of lyricism, rhythm, and a flow. Given that I was a slow learner, took time to grow. Given that half my life was spent buried under snow. Weighed out the way lies and weighed history told. My own skin weighted over, still a niche to the bone. My white guilt blacked out until I learned to accept. The white race can't be blamed for all the hurt and neglect. I turned my head to the right, but I swerve to the left. I gotta do it differently, that's how I earn my respect. There's no hate left in me, no more burning my chest. I'm gonna live for the lost and put in work till my death. Skins on my skis, got skins on my ride. Skins got my back, got skins at my side. Skins on my skis, got skins on my ride. Skins got my back, got skins at my side. Skins on my skis, got skins on my ride. Skins got my back, got skins at my side. Skins on my skis, got skins on my ride. Skins got my back, got skins at my side.
That's One in Rotation on the Aux at firstnationsexperience.com/the aux, that's A-U-X. Skins from Shebastic, though with support from Lightning Cloud on this one and in the background now. Shebastic was born Chris Sutherland, so I wanted to know how the name Shebastic came about.
I'm not sure if there's a pun intended on that or not, but there's a place out in the bay on the Moose Factory side of the bay, we call it, where I'm from, the James Bay, called Shebastic, and I'd always heard about this place. And one time I was on a lunch break at one of the jobs I was working, and we were renovating a home in Moosonee. And these older guys were talking about this place. They were talking about a hunting trip they had out there or something. And the one guy asked the other guy what it meant. The guy said underground flow. And I was at that point in my career, I was kind of searching for a new name. At the point, I was going by Cree alias because I didn't have a Cree name yet at the time. My Cree name now is Wabeshu, White Lynx. I've since got it. But at the time, I didn't have a Cree name, so I called myself Cree alias.
Okay.
I'm the Cree alias of Chris Sutherland was a thing.
Nice.
But I was searching for that alias, an actual alias, a name. So when I heard that, I thought that's so perfect because I'm an underground rapper. Yeah. I flow my lyrics. So
That's totally cool.
Like I heard that story for a reason.
Do you mind explaining? I've never had anybody else do this before, but would you mind explaining the difference between, say, the government name that you end up with when you're born and then the name that you're presented with later on?
Yes. So many of us, we've lost our original names, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when we get that name, that spirit name, some of them call it, their Indian name, some of them call it, we don't use the word Indian so much anymore.
Right.
Native or indigenous. But that name is just really special. I was told, like, my name is White Lynx. And I had an elder tell me that that's not exactly who I am. It's more like my spirit guide, or there's a White Lynx with me.
Okay.
And I had another elder tell me one time when I was performing that while I was performing and speaking about residential schools, he saw a big White Lynx come walk up behind me.
Oh, wow.
He was kind of walking around me, and he said there was a bunch of little baby lynx around me too. Not exactly sure what that means. I have an idea. When you hear these things, you're told you're going to know at the right time in your life, you'll know exactly what it meant. I don't really know yet,
somebody.
But I thought that was really cool because my name was White Lynx, and then I had this elder tell me that he saw one with me. So much we don't really know for sure. We're still trying to learn back so much of what was taken from us.
Sure.
I really encourage everybody to go out there and do the ceremony to get your name. Everybody I know who's gotten the name, when you're given their name, it's like you already knew it. I'd already referred to myself as being a lynx 3 times in my lyrics before I got the name. My favorite thing to do in this world is be out there hunting by myself, hunting either partridge or where I'm just tracking down partridge through the bush, you know, with my gun by myself. That's what I love more than anything, and that's, you know,
as a lynx would.
As a lynx, yeah.
I was picturing a cat stalking its prey, as you were describing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
I didn't expect that. Wow, that is really cool.
Please bury my heart in Moosonee and put my body on a boat, push it through the reeds. Send arrows of flames to pierce my remains. Set my mind free and let my spirit do the same. Don't want to die in vain, so I'm trying to gain knowledge needed to make sure that I'm not defeated. So I ride the train as often as I can, stopping when I can, getting off and on the land. Ain't hard to find need of pride when you know where it hides. Deep inside high tides and behind skylines, I listen as a pine cries. Intent as pure as a tear from divine eyes. Miss the way it was. These days everybody's getting dirty like it's raining mud. And kings raining clubs, saying praise us, forget your creator's love. I'm just trying to be who I choose to be, with a spear in my side and a wounded knee. I'm dirt bound like roots and seeds, so bury my heart in Moosonee.
Lately I've been losing sleep with a fear deep inside that I'll lose what's creep. But I can never lose what's me, so bury my heart in Moosonee.
You mentioned James Bay near Moosonee. It's a coastal area.
Yeah, if you look on the map of Ontario, it's the big, huge bay in the north.
Okay.
Hudson Bay, and then James Bay is the smaller bay at the southern point of Hudson Bay. So to give people an idea, I always tell them, get to Toronto, because everybody knows where Toronto's from. And I say you got to drive 8 hours north to Timmins, to Cochrane, Ontario. It's as far as you could drive north, and then you got to jump in the train, Polar Bear Express, for another 5 hours to the last stop, and that's Moosonee. That's right. The last stop in the train. Yeah.
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, I was picturing just how far north it could be, because relative to the states here, Canada is just far, far north.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get much further north.
Toronto was the far south to me. Growing up, Toronto was the far south.
Miami. Okay.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
This is where you grew up, and this is from your website. Again, that's simply shebastic.com.
Mm-hmm.
Your art and your music that comes from inspirations of hunting life. You grew up hunting for food.
Yes.
Talk about this aspect of it. Once we start talking about your paintings, and when people see your paintings, this is another side of you that we'll touch on, but when people see this, they will know that you spend a lot of time outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And so talk about how nature and the land, the First Nation culture, talk about how that comes into your art and your music.
It's the backbone. It's what it's all been about from the beginning. You know, I got into music at a very young age. It was actually in the late 90s when I started rapping, but before that I was painting. My artwork has always been about sharing the beautiful side of our culture. Not just the beautiful land, but also our traditions happening on the land and people seeing that. Just sharing the beauty and the pride of that, you know. My father took me hunting at a very young age. Hunting was a big part of my life, and growing up in Moosonee, it was a big part of everybody's lives when I was growing up.
Mm.
Our freezers were always full of wild game. At least a few times a week we were eating wild meat, you know. We also grew potatoes in our backyard. But I learned so much about, it's not just the pride I have from not just being native, but being a native by practice. There's a different kind of pride that comes with that. It's a different, when you're practicing these traditions in this culture, there's a different kind of pride that comes with that.
Sure.
And I can't imagine the pride that comes with speaking the language. That's something I really wish. I speak very little. My dad was a fluent speaker. My grandmother didn't speak any English at all. I know my dad has told me once when I was young, he said one of his biggest regrets is not passing the language on.
Mm.
So I plan to learn it one day. It's a big goal of mine is to learn my language. I've seen people, I have friends my age who didn't speak it at all, but in the past few years have learned it. So I know it's possible. And the guy Bradley AJ, the guy singing on my course for my new song, Stay, he's a big influence, because he's to hear him speaking the language over there. He moved to a different community and was just immersed in the language, and now he's speaking it fluently.
Oh, wow, nice.
So he's a big, yeah.
That's something that there were generations where folks were not allowed to have their language, and so it has really, truly died out in some cases, and so folks still keeping that alive. That is impressive, and I'm glad to see that it's continuing, and there's a desire to see it continuing, too, with you.
Just trying to be who I choose to be, with a spear in my side and a wounded knee. I'm dirt bound like roots and seeds, so bury my heart in Moosonee. Lately, I've been losing sleep, with a fear deep inside that I'll lose what's creep. But I can never lose what's me, so bury my heart in Moosonee.
That's Music in Conversation with Shebastic. More at shebastic.com. S-H-I-B-A-S-T-I-K. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online and on mobile devices at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. I want to talk about, this is something that, regarding your art, and I suppose this would be the two-dimensional art that we're talking about, but correct me if I'm wrong, that sometime in your youth, you were presented with an eagle feather.
Yes, I was.
Was this by an elder, by your grandfather?
An elder named David Keoki.
Okay.
There was a guy named Paul McLeod, who's a filmmaker. He wanted to do a documentary on my paintings. I was just kind of starting painting at the time. So he'd come by the house, and he was watching me. He was recording me, filming me paint and doing little interviews, asking me questions about my artwork. And this elder had come by and was just kind of listening in. And the day after, the elder came back by himself and presented me with his eagle feather. I'll never forget, I was in the kitchen, my mother was there, my father wasn't at the house at the time, but when he did it, he told me that I had no idea what it meant, I just knew it was a big deal. He handed me this beautiful eagle feather, and he looked at me and said, I'm recognizing you as being an official Cree warrior, because you're fighting for your culture with your art, at that time it was just my artwork.
And you were a kid, though, at this
point. I was 17 years old, I just turned
17. Oh, you were
17,
okay.
So fairly young. And I remember the chills going up my back, I remember seeing the look on my mother's face, her eyes kind of welled up, she knew what a big deal it was. And I always compare it to that moment when a knight gets knighted. You know?
Sure,
that's
yeah.
kind of the to explain it. You know, that's what it felt like. You know, this not just an elder, but a respected traditional elder in the community. So when he gave me that feather, from that point on, I knew, okay, I got art and music is something, it's a weapon. And it could be used for bad or good. And I've seen how it can be used for bad. I've seen myself growing up, the music I listened to, started to look at women differently, started to do things I shouldn't have been doing because of the music I was listening to. So right. I knew the power in it. So then having that eagle feather, and it just made me realize, okay, I'm a warrior, and this is how I'm going to fight for my people, my music and my art.
I read that, as you just said, you knew that it was a big deal, even though you didn't fully appreciate the full significance of it.
Yeah.
But you did recognize it as both an honor and a major responsibility. That's the part that I really want to focus on. Talk about this responsibility that you felt, that you, once you were given that feather, once you were knighted with the feather, what was that responsibility? What did you know that you had to do differently? You know what I'm saying?
Put the pressure on me to realize the power in the music and the art, to be very, very careful with your words. Things can be taken different ways, and always be careful. Sometimes you're saying something and I know somebody might take this the wrong way. So I'm always really careful with that now. I'll just reword it until I know I'm getting my point across.
Good.
I take a lot of time with my songs. This next album I'm working on right now, I've been working on for almost 10 years now. It's been old. So this one I'm really putting a lot of time into.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I would just kind of rush stuff out. I would write verses and make a beat and kind of throw them together. But big responsibility did come with that. And especially having a child. I had a child at a young age. So, and like I said, seeing how influenced I was, I know the power of music firsthand.
Absolutely. Let's go and jump a little bit to the new album. And this is yet to come out, but you do have Stay out. And Stay as a single, we referenced it just a second ago. But this one has already been released as a single,
Actually, we're just releasing it now.
Just released.
It's going to be released right after we do the show.
Oh, by the time this airs, then.
Yeah,
okay.
And then I'll get it on iTunes, and it takes a couple days before it'll be on iTunes, but it'll be out soon. Okay. We're working on the video right now. Got some amazing footage walking through the desert with my snowshoe moccasins on.
Oh, wow.
You know, the song's all about how we've been walking for so long, we're not quite sure where we're going anymore.
Oh, wow.
But in the end, as Native people, it's about we just got to get back to where we're from.
You mentioned somebody that sang on it a bit ago.
Yeah, Bradley A.J.
George
Kish is his last name.
And how did you end up with him, getting together for this tune?
I grew up with him. He's a good friend of mine. We went to high school together.
Oh, wonderful.
Then he moved across the bay to Wemigee, Quebec. He's like the head of the youth justice department over there. So he brings me up there to do workshops with the youth.
So there will be a connection there definitely get back to. Okay, let's stick with Stay for just a moment.
All right.
So this, although it's a single, this will be on the new album when it comes out?
Yes, it will. Yeah, for sure.
Tell me about the creation of that song. Was it an incident that you saw? Was it just a hook that came to you? Was it a phrase that you just had to rhyme? And how did Stay come about?
This was a gift. So many songs I've written, sometimes I say, I know it was a gift. Sometimes you're just asking for the lyrics and you just write and it's like it didn't even come. You're not sure where it came from. But this song, this one here, this I think was a gift for Brad. He came to me and said he had this chorus that came to him. And right away he knew it was, I got to give this to Shabastic to use for a chorus for a song. So he just sang it to me. He sang me this chorus. Really bluesy sounding chorus. And it just sounded amazing. He's got such a great voice, this guy. First time he did it, I recorded it. I recorded him singing it. Then I brought it home and I was listening to it, trying to get an idea of what I could do with it. It's a lot slower tempo than I was used to.
Oh.
I kept hearing this round dance beat to it. Ba-booms, 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 that kind of vibe. Next time we went there, I recorded him singing it. We made that beat in the studio that had that feeling to it. I had a guy named Drayden Mist, a younger guy, very good guitar player who was there. So he came in the studio and he laid down the bass and the guitar.
Cool.
Yeah, it all kind of happened really quick. Then I took it back home. I remixed the beat, worked with the beat a bit more. And then I wrote the lyrics. The lyrics came really fast, came quite quickly for this song, actually. They just kind of flowed out. So it was a gift from him, very thankful.
Because
I would never have come up with this kind of beat, this kind of vibe on my own.
Right.
It all came with that gift he was given.
It started with the chorus, then you stacked on the beat to, I guess, keep it going, to find that flow.
Find the flow.
And then you wrote the chorus afterwards. Okay, wow.
Which I'm learning is a much better process. Like I said before, I'd write my lyrics just on my own with a beat in my head. And then kind of make a beat or find a beat that they fit with, you know? So it would work, but I'm finding not near as good as when you write to the actual, to the beat. So.
Well, that's something that I'll be listening to. One of the things that I love about interviews with musicians and, with other types of artists too, is that once you get some of the knowledge there, you can hear these things with a different ear.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be able to know that this beat may have come first before the lyric that went just so perfectly.
Yeah.
Again, this is straight from the website once again, talking about you producing music independently by 1998. And then in 2002, You landed a spot on a TV series called First Music and Arts. What is this, first of all, First Music and Arts?
It's a TV show on APTN, the Aboriginal People's Television
Network.
That's
the Canadian
FNX.
Yeah,
okay. Yes, it is. Okay. I don't think they do this show anymore. A guy named Victor Linklater was the guy who was working on the show, and he was in Moosonee. The first time I rapped in front of a crowd live, like at a party, This guy was at this party. The place went nuts. I had a powwow singer named Gitchy Chichu who was singing on my first album on a song called Wild Game. We freestyled, they did some songs. Gitchy started powwow singing over the beat, and the place went crazy. It was a New Year's Eve party, a two-story house, and everyone had moved into the basement for the show. There was supposed to be a band there that didn't show up, so they had all the equipment set up. So they're instead of putting it away, I was like, oh, I'll try something. So it just kind of happened on a whim. And then because of that, we landed a show on APTN.
You
national
did something
television.
On a whim. Yeah. Somebody recognized the talent, the drive, the passion behind it, and then they got you onto the TV.
Onto a national show. And then from that, I got my booking shows in Ottawa. And so I'm very lucky I got that start.
That's almost like a made-for-TV movie about the kid who just wants to make it in a band. He grows hair, but now what? You know, wow, that's really cool. And this made you amongst the first of the native hip-hop artists to BC.
National television, I believe, yeah.
How did you start touring then? Because ranging from powwows in Northern Ontario to nightclubs in Chicago, how did you start branching off into your touring?
It started just doing local shows in Moosonee, and like I said, the show that got me on national television started getting me booked other places. But my music started getting played on a lot of reservation radio stations. And I started getting called to go to random places and going to reserves I've never heard about where people knew who I was. And back then, that was before we even had Facebook and YouTube and all that
stuff.
You know, it was just by radio and kind of word of mouth. Because of what I was rapping about, too. Because it's like, this guy's rapping about the land, about the culture, about our history, about residential schools. And because of the content of the music, people wanted me to come and perform and speak to the youth.
Yes.
Like, they were looking for someone to perform and also share a positive message with the youth, which at that time, back then, was really hard to find in hip-hop.
Yes.
Really hard. Now there's a lot more artists who are doing positive things in music, but back then, like, when I first started going to the schools, trying to get into the schools, it was tough. A lot of the principals were like, what? You want to come rap in my school? Like, they had this attitude right away, like, no.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Even if you're saying positive things, they're probably going to hear your music, which probably isn't, you know. But it just kind of kept building. Once they let me in, I get called back, and it's become this huge thing.
You're listening to KBC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Back now to music and conversation with Shabastic, online at shabastic.com and on the AUX, the music video service of First Nations Experience, fnx.org/theAUX, AUX.
The weekends were the only time it used to happen. Lately, every night they're drinking with the music blasting. Kids trying to sleep, too scared to go to sleep. And the reason is too deep for me to speak. They go to school, but they can't seem to focus. They feel lost, feel trapped, feel hopeless. What hurts the most is that no one seems to notice. They start to think that they'd be better off homeless. Don't know what home is, they were never shown it. See, they were robbed of their youth that was stolen.
No, there are five full albums out. Your first one was Wild Game. When did that one start for you?
Wild Game, geez, that was back in 2003.
Okay, pretty early on. And then since then, we've spanned close to today with Between Moose River and Anishinaab Hip Hop. That was a mixtape?
Yeah, that's a mixtape.
Okay.
Yeah. And that one's not out on iTunes.
Wild Life, and then finally Underground Flow. And some of the videos that one can find pretty quickly include Hurt People. I found a couple of versions of this, including a nice live one. Talk about Hurt People, please. I want to know when it came about, but I don't necessarily mean the release date. But again, what was it that made that one happen? There's such a strong message behind this one.
Now, that Hurt one was started out originally as a mixtape track. There's a song called Mad World. Gary Jules, it was his version of it. Can't remember now who actually wrote the song. But one of the lyrics in the song is, I went to school and no one knew me. The teacher looked right through me. And I heard those lyrics and couldn't help but think of residential schools, like these kids being forced to go somewhere and with these people who not only don't really care about them, but almost have hate for them, and you know, and to be forced to live through that. So I said, okay, so I chopped that up. I made my own beat to it and wrote the song.
Hurt people, that's true. They try to cut our roots when they took our youth. I refuse to call them schools. They were more like prisons. They said, thou shalt not steal, then stole our children. Torture chambers and forced religion. They said, thou shalt not steal, then stole our children.
And Hurt People, what that comes from is when I was at the jail, I was one of the programs I was reading through, that sentence was in there. Hurt people, period. And at first I was looked at it, that's a typo. That can't be proper English. But then I thought, no, hurt people. Very obvious. People who have been hurt are the ones who hurt other people.
Yeah.
So I thought about our situation. We're hurting ourselves. You know, we have the highest suicide rates in the world.
Mm.
In the world, every week we're hearing about another young person who's taken their life in Northern Canada. It's just really, really sad what's going on up there. So I wanted people to connect this sadness we're dealing with now with what happened to us. Because, you know, that's what I learned, the work I did at the jail. Man, I worked with these kids, these 18-year-old young men who had no idea what happened in residential schools. All the abuse and the pain and stuff they were going through in their homes.
They didn't know about the haircutting or the loss of language or...
No, they don't.
Wow.
They didn't. Because they had parents who went there and didn't say a word about it.
Oh, okay.
Never talked about it, and no one talks about it. Don't trigger me. Don't talk about it, you know?
They tried to cut our roots when they took our youth. I refused to call them schools. They were more like prisons. They said, thou shalt not steal, then stole our children. Torture chambers and forced religion. They said, thou shalt not steal, then they stole our children.
This one boy I talk about a lot, 18 years old, he had committed the worst crime you can imagine, but he had so much shame in being Native. Shame because of the abuse he went through as a youth at the hands of someone who's supposed to love him. And he knew about all his friends, too, went through similar kinds of abuse. He knew it was just a big deal in his community, it was a common thing. And he thought it was common because Natives do this to their kids. This is just a Native thing, just ashamed. Just hard guy, scary looking guy, just because he put that face on all the time.
Sure.
Man, I love this guy. His little brother would come visit, and he would, you know, there was always a wall between them. You know, so many of the youth we worked with had, this was a story with them, they just had literally never been hugged. I got to give this guy his first hug. And he told me that was his first hug. You know, when he told me that, he laughed, and I thought he was kidding. I thought he meant, like, first time a buddy hugged him. And I said, he's like, you know, so I've actually met 18-year-old men who've never been hugged.
I don't understand why you can't stop from tearing up right now.
I do a lot. I'm holding it together right now.
Wow, yeah.
But I got to give him his first hug. And after talking to him about, you know, did this guy who hurt you, did he go to residential school? His first thing, yes, so? Like, don't make up excuses for him.
Wow.
Really, it's like, so you know what happened there? He's like, he never effing talked about it. Angry.
Mm.
So I started sharing. I've talked to so many survivors. I've been to over 50 reserves. I've talked to so many elders. I performed the song Hurt People one time, and I had the elders stand up after and tell me and thank me and said, for the first time in 90 years, she can stand up again because she thought nobody cared.
Oh, my God.
You know? So I told them about all these stories. I had a 90-year-old man tell me he watched 9 of his best friends beaten to death in front of the classroom and drugged, because they were overheard speaking the language. 10-year-old kids. You know, and I told all these horrible stories. Something just told me, just tell him, don't hold back, tell him.
Yeah.
And I told him about all this kind of abuse that he went through and how rampant it was at these schools and why. And he had no idea. And I'm watching this guy like a light bulb, like all of a sudden, that's why.
New perspective.
That's why it happened. It's not because we're Native.
Yeah.
It's like, no wonder, you know, like, and then from after that meeting, he was on suicide watch before that, to the point where I had to watch him go to the washroom and sleep.
Right.
Because he was so depressed about the life he had taken, that guy had a daughter, and he said he had nightmares about her.
Oh, my gosh.
But when he opened up about what really happened, where the real depression came from, and then understood it all, you could see the weight lift. And we went for a walk in the yard and gave him his first hug. You know, he joked about it, and we joked about what if the other inmates were outside watching at that moment. But after that moment of just understanding everything, within a week, he was off suicide watch.
Oh, nice.
He became the guy in the jail that everyone was afraid of, to the guy that people... no one messed around in front of, because he would break it up, or, you know, he just was
like,
the next time his family came to visit, his little brother walked in, and he opened up his arms and gave his little brother the biggest hug ever and had him on his lap the whole
little
time.
Brother had to have been surprised.
He was told, you should have seen his face. That, like, I almost lost it there. Like,
that's
to see someone change, from such a change, just from learning about our history. That's why I think it's so important.
Well, you have had to have had a lot of experiences about that, because this is, again, something we touched on that we should explain a little bit. You were working at youth detention facilities and working at jails and working with foster kids in this. Explain, if you wouldn't mind, how you ended up with this, because it ended up with you being employed as an intensive rehabilitation custody supervision worker. Mm-hmm. Gosh, there's so much that goes with that. How did that start for you?
Oh, my gosh. It started back in Moosonee. I went to school for fine arts in Georgian College in Barrie, and it didn't really work out too well. After the first year, I took a break and went back home to just live with my parents and to figure out what I really wanted to do. So I was looking for work, and I got a job at this school just working in the class with the Section 9 students, which is special needs students.
Okay. Okay.
I got a job at a receiving home. I worked at a receiving home for a whole summer. And that was youth who had been taken from their homes because of issues in the home. We had 11 youth in that house. And we were basically their parents. We did homework with them. We fed them. We did everything.
Sort of a foster facility before they would go off to individual homes?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we did shift work. We would work 8-hour shifts. And so these kids had all these parents pretty much, you know. And,
nice.
You know, I did that work. That led to the work in the schools. So that kind of gave me that experience, I guess, working with youth. And then it became just people asking me to speak after I performed to youth. And I don't know what exactly I did to get myself where I got myself. I just feel like I was following my feet, just always being open to just having faith that, and just saying, I want to do something good. I want to make a change. Being open to what doors are going to open to me, you know? I don't know.
That's Music in Conversation with Chris Sutherland, a.k.a. Shabastic. More at Shabastic.com. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online and on mobile devices at kvcrnews.org. You were in a place, I guess it was a happenstance to get that job, but stuck with it, and you seem to continue to develop in that area or region or arena, maybe I should say. I don't know how to say it, but that's just really cool. And it was through the Youth Detention Center that you developed your Healing Through Hip-Hop workshops.
Yeah.
Let's touch on these briefly. There's a few of them. You said Native Class, Hunt for Healing, and Hurt People. Let's go right into Hurt People since we were just talking about the song.
Well, Hurt People is a presentation that is specifically about residential schools and teaching everything about what happened there and just all about residential schools. In the beginning, it was just the Healing Through Hip-Hop workshop that touched on all of this stuff, but it became too long. It's like a three-hour thing, so I split it up into sections. The Native Class is all about the seven teachings and just what it means to have a Native class, to be a real Native warrior, to live by these teachings, having respect for the land, for yourself, for people, all these things. It's just about a... kind of could be an anti-bullying thing for younger schools, too.
Nice.
The Hunt for Healing is about how I'm on a hunt for healing, helping my people heal, and how I go hunting because it's healing. Being out on the land is such a healing thing, and just all about connecting to the culture, all the cool things that happened to me out on the land, all the things that made me who I am today, just the value of hard work that gets instilled in you being out there, and all these different things. Just really encouraging youth to want to be like, you know what, it's cool to be a hunter. It is cool to be out there in the land. Let's go, we should go hunting this weekend instead of partying kind of thing. You know, that's what that workshop's about.
You were talking about the seven teachings. So let's go back to one of your tunes, and this is another video that you can find easily enough. It's called The Seven Teachings, and it starts talking about the goose hunt. This is a tradition.
Yeah.
So I guess before we can even talk about the song, let's talk about this goose hunt tradition that I just alluded to.
The spring hunt, it happens April 15th to April 30th. That's the time of year when the geese, Canada geese, are all passing through. They're just passing through in huge flocks. So everyone is out there in their camps and their blinds hunting geese that time of year. When I was young, instead of a March break, they moved the school March break to April just because they knew everyone's gone in April anyway for the hunt. So they totally switched the whole school break for that. When I was growing up, there was nobody. It was like a ghost town during that time of year. We still have a lot of hunters. I'm not saying there's not, but what I'm trying to bring back is how it used to be where everyone is out there practicing because unfortunately some families, and it's hard too because it's expensive to do this, to get out there and you know, the gas money, the shells and food and everything. It's not something you think, oh, it's just the bush you can, but no, it costs a lot of money. It's not free. And especially
blankets.
Everything. And some of the camps we go to are flying. So we actually got to take a chopper or a bush plane there.
Sure.
So that costs a lot of money too, to be able to do that is a blessing for sure. But it's a huge thing in James Bay. So I had to feature that for the video. So I just brought my camera out on the actual hunt and just shot footage throughout the whole hunt and kind of put it all together for the video just to share that tradition with everybody.
I can't seem to escape the feeling that something's missing. It's change we're grieving. Instead of praying and believing and healing, I'm thinking we're sinking without our sacred teachings. The rivers are drying, the streets are running red. Seems a hateful world, but I know that love ain't dead. Now we will all do what we may come to regret. So teach them even the worst deserve some respect. Karma will come collect. All got your culture, but some culture's gone, some lost or altered. Majority of mine passed on orally, and those that stopped listening lost morally. Speak with honesty and seek the truth. Be brave in all you do, but have humility too. Gain wisdom and show respect, and always give more than the love you get. Respect, love, courage, and wisdom. The what we need, steady greed running the system. Humility, honesty, and truth are missing. It's time to return to the land to listen. Respect.
So let's talk more then about the seven teachings overall. I'd asked you about this earlier, saying that I couldn't find the seven teachings, but of course I was skimming through, I was looking for the answer really too quickly, and if I had really taken my time with it, it's like repeated five times already, every time we get to the course. Talk about the seven teachings, please.
All right, they are respect, love, courage, wisdom, humility, honesty, and truth. Okay. Myself, growing up, I never heard about these things. My father taught me about my culture by showing me. He wasn't the kind of man who would sit down and verbally pass on these teachings to me. It was just how he treated animals, even hunting, you know, like when we kill our geese. Drove him crazy to watch these hunting shows where these guys grab the goose by the neck and just kind of wring its neck. And
yeah.
He's like, come on, like that's traumatizing. And half the time you're just breaking their neck and they're lying there paralyzed, you know. Of course, I'd always get in trouble if I wounded it and it wasn't a perfect shot and dropped it dead.
Yes,
it's like,
yes.
And it was always get to the goose as fast as possible.
How good.
And we spread its wings. We gently put your knee in its back and slowly kneel down. And then he, using a calm voice and just a very calm energy, and you feel the goose kind of calm down. It's very quick, very painless, but at the same time, it was a sad thing to do, you know, something you don't enjoy doing. So I saw he loved these animals, where some people go hunting just bang, 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 bang.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a big joke, right?
Yeah.
That's not how he taught me. He had love and compassion for these animals. We always had a limit of how much we were going to shoot.
Good.
That was it, you know.
Cool.
So he taught me how to respect the land and nature that way. It was always keep the camp so clean. We always bring everything with us back, you know, leave it how it was when we got here.
At least, or better.
Yeah, clean up.
Yeah.
Which is another thing when we get wood. You know, our forests are so cluttered now because trees dry and then they fall over and lie there. That's not in how it should be. Is when trees die, those are the ones we take down for firewood.
Yes.
It's lying there, it hasn't fallen down it, it's perfectly dry. Might take more work to get in there and get them, but if everyone's doing that, the forest remains clean and clear.
Yeah.
But nowadays, what people do is an easy way, you just go into somewhere and cut down a bunch of living trees, lie them down, let them dry. Like, that's not the way to do it. You're killing a living thing.
Yes.
You know, when you have all these other ones just waiting to be done, you know? And so he taught me about all these things, and just the respect is a big thing. Respect for each other, the land. When we go hunting, we had two families. One family shot 25 geese, and one family shot 5, still 15 each.
Good.
Never question. It's just we splitting it up. We all put in the same work. Who cares who shot what?
Yeah.
You know, so all these little things he taught me about what it means to have native class. You know?
That is so cool. And that, you know, it's we look at it as the seven teachings. A person could say, well, number one is this. You should never do this, or you should always do this. And it would go from there through the seven. But instead, he actually gave you the applicable life lesson. I mean, it's good to treat animals in a good, calm, nice way anyway. And then to be told, well, this is one of the seven teachings, you can apply it. That's cool. That's really cool. The song actually starts off with, I can't seem to escape the feeling that something's missing. This is the seven teachings. I could almost see you reasoning out, how am I going to write this song? And then, well, I can't seem to think of it. You know, there's something missing. It's like, oh, and it went from there.
Yeah.
Is that really it?
That's it.
Oh.
Something's missing, and it's the teachings.
Okay.
That's it. And that's what the song's about, bringing back what's taken from us. It's missing not because we lost it. It's missing because it was stolen from us in a brutal, brutal way.
Did you intend to write about the seven teachings when you started that song, or did you...
That one I did, yeah.
Okay.
And the idea was just to mention each of the teachings throughout the song.
Nice.
And then the chorus came out.
Respect, love, courage, and wisdom. The one we need, steady greed running the system. Humility, honesty, and truth are missing. It's time to return to the land to listen. Respect, love, courage, and wisdom. We're blinded by lust, wanna shine and glisten. Humility, honesty, and truth are missing. It's time to return to the land to get them.
I will continue to be heard when I'm dead and buried. Let every verse of road emerge from the cemetery. My heart and head are heavy, earn what I get to carry. I steady put in paperwork like a secretary. I go reserve to reserve, swamp best to prairie. Put in my faith in my words like we're getting married. Never stray from my purpose, no matter how much it hurts, it's worth. This is going out to the six.
Another song I want to hit before I get to another side of you here, and that is the art side, Rapala Shades. While a lot of these seem to be very much about the people or the land, Rebelous Jades, it seems very much a self-history piece. There's more self-reflection in that than some of the others. So talk about that one, please.
Yeah, Rapala Shades are, for those of you who don't know, they're fishing, they're, Rapala is, the, they do good fishing hooks. I love their jointed Rapala, whatever you call them.
This is like Craftsman or...
Yeah, they're I love their hooks anyway. Okay. For me, they got the best hooks for walleye.
Okay.
And so I just thought I'd plug them just for fun. But their sunglasses are that I wear are polarized. They didn't pay me to do it. I just thought, you know what?
But my mailing address is.
Yeah, exactly. It's just about seeing through the glare. I also do talk about it in the song, our disconnection from the land as well. I have a metaphor about how we're all walking on cement. Mm. And that's the real metaphor for what's happening. We're separated from the land. Mm. Like the video I just shot, like I said, with wearing my snowshoe moccasins, walking around through the desert just for the video footage, I forgot how good it feels to walk and feel the land, feel every rock, feel everything, and actually, you know, and that's what's missing. That's what so much of us need in our lives, is that to reconnect.
Wow. To that, you know. That's, again, really, really cool. Something I didn't expect with that one. Your website, once again, is simply shibastik.com, shibastik.com. And you'll find his story, which, interesting, looks history when you look at it.
Yeah.
And then there's also, well, of course, bookings or contact. But amongst the other tabs that you can find in there is artwork and photography. The photography is that of your girlfriend, you said?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and this is really nice to see. It's a lot of photos of you out in the wild or out enjoying nature. But then some of these other photos, it's a photo of a valley or a beautiful sunset or looking out onto the water. That's your girlfriend, Kat.
Mm-hmm.
And Kat, no website just yet, but you need to get to one. But in the meantime, you can see Kat's work at shibastik.com. But we also have paintings there. And the paintings are the works of Chris here. Chris, Shibastik, I may be interchanging these here and there. But again, folks, go to shibastik.com to see these. Some of these are very much from inside your head, a fantasy or a symbolic, the people, the bird. Then others... from a campsite or a cabin in the woods. Again, it's clear that you spend a lot of time outside. These ones that are based on realism, like the campsite, for example. Do you go from photos, or do you sit there sketching all day and eventually paint it? What's your process as a 2D artist?
Pretty much from my mind. Sometimes I'll get the basic landscape. I used to take a lot of photos and then try to paint them exactly.
Right.
But it's gotten to the point where I'm trying to tell a story that's in my head.
Ah.
And but a lot of them are real places just from memory, though.
Okay. Yeah. People will see one. There's a cabin with a smokestack coming out of it, and there's campsites. These ones look like they could have been from a place that you were at. But again, this was just something that you created in your mind.
From a memory. And the one you're talking about, a lot of the times I'll have the campsite and the traditional thing going on, but in the distance you'll see a city. If you look close, you'll see the horizon of the city
coming. Something, yes.
And what that's about is just kind of about that fear, I guess, that we're, how much longer are we going to have this pristine wilderness when the cities and everything is spreading so quickly? How important it is to get out there and experience it while we still have it.
We've got the beauty of nature, but warning, this thing is looming over the horizon.
What can we do to prevent that? What can we do to keep this pristine?
Putting my faith in my words like we're getting married. Never stray from my purpose, no matter how much it hurts.
That's Music in Conversation with Shibastik. Once again, all over YouTube and also at shibastik.com. Again, S-H-I-B-A-S-T-I-K. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks once again to Shibastik, a.k.a. Chris Sutherland. His music heard tonight came primarily from Underground Flow, Moose River, and Wildlife. The others may be available at the website. Thanks also to Vicky Goodglick, Marketing and Events Manager at Lake Arrowhead Village. At FNX, thanks to Frank Blanquette and Weldon Grover. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Jessica Greenwell, Shireen Awad, Esel Quapio, Benjamin Perper, and KVCR General Manager Keith Bergfeld. Music beds and themes heard on KBC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KBC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org. And thanks again.